Hello and welcome to this edition of Radio Free HPC. This is where we talk about high performance computing, supercomputing, and other technology topics. I'm your Toastmaster Rich Breckner with my co-hosts Dan Olds and Shaheen Khan from OrionX and Henry Newman from Seagate Government Solutions. Now let's get to the show. Welcome back to Radio Free HPC. I'm Rich Breckner, here with my co-hosts Dan Olds and Shaheen Khan from OrionX, and Henry Newman from Seagate Government Solutions. Did I get that right, Henry?
You did.
I did. Awesome. Hey, welcome back, guys.
Hey.
Hey, good to be back.
It is good to be back. You know, it's been a very event-filled week with Intel doing their Intel Developer Forum, and I thought, you know, we'd take this opportunity to talk about what Intel is saying out there and where they're headed as a company in our space.
Well, it's all been about the future of computing recently, hasn't it?
It really has. They had some trouble with PC systems kind of declining, that market are shrinking, and they said they're going to get their growth from the cloud, places like that.
Well, and grab the other 5% of data centers they don't have already.
Well, they've been executing very well. But clearly, as we've moved from, you know, the mainframe terminal world to client server to now mobile cloud, it's an inflection point in the market to try to reestablish strength on the mobile side while achieving and grabbing the emerging applications on the cloud side.
So on the mobile side, what is Intel bringing to the table? I mean, they're not in our tablets so much or our phones.
I think it's the back end, Rich.
Yeah.
It's everything that those tablets and phones and everything that's not Intel is communicating to and with. Mm-hmm. They want that back end processing.
They're also putting a lot of investment in 5G networks because that's the next wave that I think they can target.
Yeah, and richer applications, more data flow means more processing to that back end that they're after. But I would argue that they kind of already own that. So I don't know if they're going to get that much growth out of it, except for the organic growth that comes from larger clouds, larger back ends.
Well, what about all these billions that are supposed to come in from IoT to the data center market, right?
I think definitely an increase in processing. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the 5G opportunity too.
Yeah.
Both for, you know, handsets and smart devices, but also for lots and lots and lots of sensors and gateways and local processing.
Yes. And absolutely.
And that's what Intel was showing off at the opening keynote, was their new sensor device and some drones and things like that, right? To show you could build this robot that walks around and follows you and things like that, I saw, right?
The driverless cars was another thing.
Yeah. They kind of took a page from the NVIDIA book and had the car drive out by itself on stage and with the CEO jumping out of the way. I thought, God, deja vu. I saw this 2 years ago at GTC. Right.
Shouldn't the car be stopping and jumping out of
the way? Yeah. I mean, well, this time it was a BMW instead of an Audi. But
nice.
Yeah.
So, but no injuries.
No injuries.
Good.
Yeah. And they asked the car to drive away, and it did its job. So,
they also talked about 3D cameras.
The 3D cams.
For
augmented reality, that kind of thing.
Well, I think the use cases are going to be everywhere, but definitely augmented reality is the first place, the virtual reality, augmented reality stuff, yeah. Mm-hmm.
My reality is too depressing right now. I don't really need to augment it.
I think you prefer 2D too, than 3D, isn't that
maybe
true?
Maybe even 1D, yeah. Henry, what do you think?
In terms of your reality being too depressing?
Well, you're a significant portion of that, yes.
Well, I'm glad I can assist in that area, Dan. I guess the, you know, going back to this augmented reality, being not a gamer, I'm hoping they use it for something valuable, like the next time I need an operation, that the doctor can use that, you know, to better operate upon me or operate upon my friends. I could see where that could be, you know, telemedicine used in that sense, but it's not my thing.
Then you need the holographic stuff too, Henry.
Yes. I'm good with that.
Yeah, there's a lot of good Henry-like uses for augmented reality. I mean, pilots, for instance.
I'm sure, but how long are we going to have pilots?
Well, planes mostly fly themselves these days.
That's
anyway.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
But nobody would say you don't need pilots.
Right, you're going to need.
In fact, those guys say the more automated it gets, the more you really need the pilot. And
flight attendants.
You always need those.
Know when those drinks are low. Know when they need to get that tray off my dinner tray. When they need to clear that.
Dan, you must be flying first class a lot if you're getting dinner trays, buddy.
Nah, it's the plastic tray that everybody else gets back at steerage.
Okay.
But the other thing that has come out this week is a big announcement from AMD, and this leads to a little bit of a broader topic. Is there any real competition for Intel on the horizon? This AMD Zen announcement was kind of interesting, that they're talking about a 32-core chip, that they're going to release in second quarter of 2017, that they expect at least to be a real competitor to Xeon.
And Dan, I you know, it's always good, you know, there's no progress without competition. But challenges for them are going to be, you know, interprocessor communications and memory bandwidth.
And in the reviews that I've seen so far, again, there's not a lot of data out there. And there's not anything that I've seen talking about the hypertransport speed of these things.
Well, because it wasn't a full-blown announcement. It was kind of a teaser, right?
Yeah.
And
I mean, they were mainly talking cores.
Yeah, they had an 8-core device, I believe, and they were putting it up against a 8-core Broadwell.
But it's a full SoC. You don't need a chipset to use it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which also means you need a new motherboard, but then, you know, you're trying to catch that next wave.
Well, to me, the most interesting piece of what happened from AMD this week was their CEO, Lisa Su, got up on Bloomberg and said, hey, HPC is our future. We are going to be in the data center. We're back in servers. And we're going to execute. So I haven't seen that come from a high level from them for years. I don't think since maybe 2006 or 7.
No, I think Opteron is the last time I saw them having that kind of a concerted focus. So that's really nice to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it comes down to, execution. They had their demo, right? And said,
yep.
So, but that's where they've fallen down since that period that Opteron, they just weren't able to get the devices out as planned.
Well, but the challenge they had, if you go back, is it wasn't the processor speed. It was hypertransport performance, in my opinion, and it was memory bandwidth.
So because they're adding cores, and you've got to be able to get a corresponding increase in the memory bandwidth, right?
Exactly.
Right. But that's why my opinion, why Opteron couldn't keep up was those two. I mean, those two were the big things that prevented them from, you know, going fast.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. No, I think you're right. We'll have to wait until more details come out to find out more about it. They haven't proved a floating point, but we'll see just how improved it is. Now, speaking of memory bandwidth, one processor that's a potential competitor to Xeon, the IBM Power 8 processor, has much more memory bandwidth.
Correct.
And that should be an advantage to them in an awful lot of workloads.
It should, and it could, but the issue is the applications, you know, support. And the advantage that AMD had at running x86 instruction set or emulation was the fact that, you know, you could take your x86 applications and you didn't have to port them.
See, I wonder also if there are many people out there in customer land that really know that story of the Power 8 now being Little Indian, et cetera. I kind of get the feeling that there's a lot that still think that, you know, Power is AIX only. I don't know, though.
Don't know.
Because we're, you know, us analyst types are typically, and you guys on the calls, we're typically, I think, probably 2 to 3 years ahead of where the median customer is in terms of what we think they're doing. For instance, we're the pundocracy, including us in this, we're all about IoT, we're all about AI, machine learning, deep learning, all of that. But in a recent survey that I did with a pretty good sized number of large enterprise and HPC folks, found out that that's not number one on their hit list. They're still doing big data and analytics. They're still getting there. That's
data warehousing. Rather.
Yeah, data warehousing, analytics, big data type things. And a small number, relatively small number, are saying that their biggest growing application is anything to do with this hot stuff we're talking about with IoT and machine learning.
Yeah, but if you want to capture a multi-billion-dollar market, you want to, you know, it helps you if you have the first mover advantage. And we're watching that with NVIDIA having, you know, such a well-established lead in deep learning because they went after it first.
Yeah. And Intel jumping in now with both feet and everybody else, including AMD.
Yeah, and I thought the rhetoric out of Diane Bryant was very interesting, right? She's talking about machine learning, saying, look, no, we are the leader. You know, there's a misperception
out there. Well,
everybody's
going to go after it. Right? The reality is that these are the emerging applications.
Yes.
You're not going to focus on ERP right now.
Yes.
Although that continues to be a very nice big market, and you can add a lot of value if you focus on it. The big emerging new ones where you can establish leadership is artificial intelligence, including machine learning and deep learning. It is IoT that actually feeds that. Yes. It's putting everything in the cloud, which is right. So that is the new world. So everybody's going to be after it.
So we have roughly 5, 6, 12 parties claiming leadership there.
I think that's what's leading to the new wars then.
Yeah.
I think as you go from client server to mobile cloud, the same disruption that allows Intel to go back after the mobile is allowing everybody else to come back after the servers too.
Yeah. And they're all coming after the HPC segment as well.
Well, HPC consistently is the place that buys CPUs by the kilo.
It's also the Formula One racing for new usage models, as Formula One racing is to cars.
Indeed, many of the innovations start with HPC and then get rationalized across the bigger market. So yeah, I think it behooves people to focus on HPC, especially if you're trying to go after large scale computations, because that's where that happens.
And also, I wanted to say, Henry, you've been kind of quiet here. Thank you.
Well, Dan, occasionally I need to let you talk.
You let him dig his hole.
You must have some thoughts.
I think that, you know, this is nothing new. Lots of people are declaring leadership. It's pretty common in new markets. Look at the early 80s in supercomputing. You had Convex, you had Cray, you had KSR, you had Floating Point, you had Systems, you had all these people saying, we're the new leadership for the, you know, HPC for the masses. You know, this is the new, the people duking it out for the, you know, the next generation applications of this decade in the machine learning and all of that. But I still think, you know, no one's talking about, and we talked about this last time, the big challenges here is, you know, I think too is security.
Yeah.
And no one is talking. I am not hearing a lot of discussion about security. And the fact is, if you're going to give up all of this activity to a machine, the potential for getting hacked and the potential of, you know, the killing mass numbers of people or injuring them is pretty huge. And the other problem I see is what I call the Luddite problem. that there's still a group of society that does not want to see this change. So I don't think everything's cut and dry.
No, you're right. You're right.
Good no, point. No. But everything you mentioned, Henry, is also opportunities for new leaders to emerge.
Right. But the current leaders aren't talking about those two things, Sheen, is my point.
Yeah, fair enough. I actually think they do, but it's not front and center. IoT security, for example, or security in general, I think everybody gets that that's an existing and a rapidly growing and always going to be there kind of a market. And they're trying to invest in it. And there are lots and lots of startups. But I agree that nothing has really emerged yet, which kind of makes it the opportunity that it is. You know, people are trying to use blockchain, for example, for IoT security. Some of the standards have got together to merge and try to rationalize the communication standards between sensors and gateways and, you know, on. So I think there is actually a lot of activity, but we certainly don't hear a lot of that in the HPC world, but even outside, to your point, it could be talked about a lot more. I agree. Part of that, I think, is because it's just a hard problem, so nobody has a clean solution yet.
Yeah.
My whole point is that I won't get a self-driving car until somebody starts talking about this.
Oh yeah, you guys heard about the Black Hat conference just a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
And again, IoT security was pretty much on full display, and there was a new hack into this other car, and you know, and then you think long term where a car can hack into the other car to get it out of the way, for example.
I would spend some money for that tech.
Yeah, that'd be a good.
I would opt into that.
Yeah.
Just make the guy speed up or get out of my way or both. I like that. That's a hell of an idea. So I guess bringing this back to our topic, though, is Intel fairly safe, or are these new processors, Power, AMD, and we can throw ARM in the conversation, are they more of a threat than ever? Rate that on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being no threat at all in any way it close, and 10 being a complete world-changing threat.
That was my
tribute to John McLaughlin, who just...
By the way, I don't think that's the right question.
Then rate my question on a scale of
1.
Idiotic question.
No,
I think perhaps the best question ever.
No. I think you're taking it up too high, Dan. I think the real question is it's not about the processor. It's the people behind the processor, and you forgot NVIDIA. Part of this.
That's true.
It's the people behind the processor and the applications and the market they're trying to serve. I think processors are effectively a commodity at this point. Yeah, and they're an important commodity, but they're a commodity. But it's going to be how you put these things together and utilize software to solve the problem.
To build your solution.
Correct. So yeah, I'm not going to answer your question.
Well done. Rich, chime in.
Just coming back to IDF quickly before I do that, Dan. It seemed to me that this is called the Intel Developer Conference, but the messaging and everything I saw was all for Wall Street. Hey, here's what's going to be hot. Here's how we're going to get it done and keep buying our stock.
You mean Wall Street in terms of investors as opposed to Wall Street in terms of processing. Gotcha.
Yes.
I heard the same thing, that it's a lot of consumer, a lot of whiz bang stuff, but not an awful lot of meat thrown out to real developers.
Yeah. And as far as the threats, certainly a competitive Zen chip will eat a little bit of Intel's market share, but I think it would be... You know, if it even got to double digit, I'd be totally surprised. I mean, it wouldn't even get onto Intel's radar, I don't think, for years to come.
Yeah, I think the move to mobile cloud is a tectonic shift. It's a once every generation kind of a shift.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at what happened last time when we went from terminal mainframe to client server, Yep. None of the existing players were really there. It was, you know, it was IBM, Fujitsu, the mainframe guys.
Yeah.
ICL, Siemens, you know, and so then you fast forward 10 years and you got a whole raft of new players. This change is even bigger than last time. Now, that doesn't mean the existing players are going to go away, but where the action is going to bring new players into the market.
But so it opens it up. It opens it up because of the tectonic shift.
That's my point. Yeah, yes. It opens it up. So yes. I think that the existing players are just like the mainframe guys. None of those guys went away. They carried on, and it took a very, very long time, and they morphed. So it is good for the existing players to focus on these new emerging applications.
Yep.
It's very important for Intel to highlight that they get it, and they've got a lot of focus on mobile, yep. and they got a lot of focus on cloud. But man, I think the opportunity is there for a lot of other players. So I expect a lot of wars here on CPU.
I expect
front.
It to become more competitive as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because people are going to say, oh, there's an opportunity. I think we can do it. So that's why these companies are getting funded. All these efforts are getting. So you look at the CPU, you look at the deep learning processing, you look at GPU, you look at FPGAs, interconnects, memory, and then software stack, on and on and on. At every level, you're going to have a dozen people fighting for it.
Good.
Well,
that'll give us more grist for more of these calls.
Well, yeah, and if you look at where they're projecting the growth to come from, Intel got on stage with Diane Bryant and said that they expect more than half of data center workloads to be machine learning / analytics by 2020. And today's number is more like 7%.
Wow.
So
yeah, that's we've been saying for a long time, Rich, as you know, for probably over a decade, that when you look at algorithmic complexity,
yes,
HPC and analytics are the only algorithms that are not just order n or order n log n. They are n squared, n cubed, some of them even bigger than that. So yep. as data increases in size, the requirements for those things is going to be what's going to grow. You know, you're not going to need to go exponentially bigger to do ERP, but you are going to go exponentially bigger to do deep learning or yes. to do, you know, complex fluid dynamics.
Right, right. But I would add that part of the problem I see is that deep learning requires a lot more communication because of the various sources that we talked about last time.
Yeah.
And I think new programming models are going to have to be developed to be successful at deep learning that deal with moving programming snippets or distributed processing rather than just, you know, crunching the data. Because I don't think you're going to be I don't think you can afford the communication network. And I think that's what DARPA is saying, but this new BAA they've got out called DARPA Hive, and I think that's what others are saying, you know, in the exascale program for DOE.
They see the roadblocks or the log jams already. That'll happen. Sounds like.
Yep. Yeah. Now, data movement, you know, we come back to what we say every show. It's data movement. Data movement is the big problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Exciting times.
Exciting times. May you live in interesting times, as the Chinese proverb / curse says. And we certainly do live in interesting times. And with that, I think we can stick a fork in this one and call it done. Thank you, everybody, for being on the call. And thank all of you out there for listening. And we'll be back at you soon with another episode of Radio Free HPC.
That's it for this edition of Radio Free HPC. Thank you for listening, and be sure to check back often for new episodes. Also, check out our website for more content, links, and a place for you to let us know what you think about the show. We're at RadioFreeHPC.com. Thanks again. We'll be back with another exciting episode real soon.